announcing the What is RevOps Handbook, the only guide you will need to learn how to accelerate your sales cycle, improve win rates, and create a predictable revenue model. Learn how to establish a revenue operations team, grow a revenue machine, and how to measure success, all within the What is RevOps Handbook. Head to evster.com/what-is-revops or click the link in the description below to grab your copy today. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales operations onto the show to deconstruct the why, what, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Evster, the leading customer engagement platform for Salesforce. Hello and welcome to another extra special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. And today we're joined by David McIntyre. Now, David is currently working at a company on the West Coast called Brex, but has experience not all in sales ops from companies like Square and Twitter. So we're going to jump into that. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. Really great to be here. Really appreciate it.
And so my first question, I'm super interested to understand how you kind of migrated into sales ops, because I know you have a couple of other, I guess, specialities from previous roles. So how, like, where and how did that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I kind of took a different route than some of my colleagues and some of the other people I'm familiar with in sales ops. Basically, I started out working in sales. I was working for a small company straight out of college in New York, ended up getting acquired by Twitter. So I went over there and continued to work in sales. We were doing influencer marketing type of stuff. So getting people to post on Vine and Instagram for brands. And like back then that was like revolutionary, revolutionary idea. And so I was selling branded advertising campaigns essentially. And so, you know, after doing that for a while, kind of got sick of the advertising industry, ended up moving out to San Francisco, working for a couple of companies, including Square, still doing sales, been doing work kind of like traditional tech sales. But I think, you know, to answer your question about how I moved into sales ops, when I was in sales, especially when I was at Square, I always was a very sort of process-oriented thinker. I really started to feel like, you know, if your system was efficient, if your process was efficient, then every sales activity that you're doing, so whether that be making phone calls or sending emails or doing demos or whatever it is, everything is going to be way more efficient, way easier. You're going to have to work less, and you're going to see better results, right? And so the other piece of it was that I, you know, having been in sales for, you know, 4 to 5 years, you know, started to feel like I was kind of like a cog in a really big machine. You know, like I was being asked to do the same thing again and again. Sales is also pretty individualistic. You know, there's not a ton of room for collaboration. Or kind of like thinking outside the box. It's like you're being asked to do something and do it really well and do it repeatedly. And so for some people, that's amazing. And I really enjoyed that for a long time. But then I kind of started to feel like, you know, I wanted to do something that was more collaborative, more creative, and kind of like work on the machine. That's the way that I started to think about it, is like, hey, if I can learn about how these systems are set up and how these processes are set up, and I know from experience, you know, what improvements I would make if I was in control, then you know, then it would be a really good fit. I could really do some great things. And so when I was at Square, I transitioned from being in sales to being a sales ops analyst, which was not, you know, exactly the easiest transition to make, just because it had never been done in the organization before. And so that's something I think, you know, when people ask me about that transition or any career transition, I think, like, if someone has kind of paved the way, it's a little bit easier in your organization. But if not, then you have to be very, very clear and very actually repetitive about like what you want and why you want it and where you want to go. And so thankfully I was able to make that transition. And I think, you know, starting in sales ops at Square is obviously a ton to learn of all types of different subjects. And I really lean on my experience as a salesperson in order to sort of get me started. And now, you know, having been in sales ops for basically 2 years plus, I, you know more about different subjects. I've gotten more in sort of the strategic and analytical side of sales ops, which I find really enjoyable. But yeah, after working in sales ops at Square for a while, I moved over to Brex, which is also a fintech company, and have been there for almost a year.
Got it. I mean, thanks for the summary. And there's one point that I want to pull out, which I think is super interesting, because I've done a few of these interviews now. And mm-hmm. obviously, to the person who's great at sales, is potentially not the most analytical person, right?
Sure.
They're like insanely emotionally intelligent. But then yeah. when you get somebody who, I guess, has enough emotional intelligence to be good at sales, but then also has the logical analytical side, they make the perfect sales ops person.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Absolutely. 100%. And I'm reminded of that. There was a colleague that I had in sales ops who was a more technically gifted analyst than anyone else on our team, who could do things with Python and in Looker and all of these technical subjects that he was just a cut above, right? But he wasn't so strong at the area of the job that you're talking about, which is communication and emotional intelligence and prioritization and things like that. And so I watched as he wasn't necessarily as effective in the sales ops position as he could have been. And so that's something I've heard actually from a lot of people that I've worked with in sales ops and in sales, is that technical skills can be learned. Technical skills can be acquired through a mixture of experience and teaching, right? But the contextualization, the communication, the prioritization, the part of the job that involves collaboration and other people and trying to kind of find a plan to make things happen, that's actually really, really, really challenging. And obviously it can be learned as well, but it helps if you have sort of a background in a job that is a little bit more related to that. So yeah, I've found that absolutely. And having experience as a salesperson is helpful regardless, you know, because you understand what the perspective is of the person that you're trying to help, or like the end user. So that's always helpful too.
Exactly. You understand the customer. Now, to zoom in onto Brex, could you just pull out the core of your tech stack? Well, what are you guys using? And what is, like, which of those tools do you really love?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, not obviously, but the foundation of it is Salesforce, right? That's the case at most large tech organizations, obviously. And then there's a huge variety of other tools that integrate to some extent with Salesforce. We use Outreach, which we used to use SalesLoft at Square. So different technology, very similar purpose of like a sales engagement platform or sort of a task management tool. I've really liked Outreach in some ways. I think in other ways, there's definitely things that could be improved. We also use Troops at Brex, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's like sort of like a virtual kind of like deal gong. It's like a Slack notification tool for sales, which is, it's especially important in a remote world. We've recently kind of focused back on that, is like, how do you create that sort of team culture of winning and celebration in a remote world? I think a tool like Troops is very helpful in that regard.
Yeah, I just have to give a quick shout out to the CEO of Troops as well. He shared one of our episodes a couple of weeks ago because he got mentioned, but carry on.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, I think that's a great example of, like, I'm sure we'll get into this, about how, like, in the remote world, there are things that are a little bit more important than they were before. So we can get onto that. I'm a huge fan of Lean Data. I don't know if this has been spoken about in the podcast before, but Lean Data is a tool that plugs into Salesforce that does a lot of routing and matching. And so, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges I've observed in my time in sales and sales ops, is just like, especially at a company like Square and Brex, where you have thousands and thousands of customers, you know, millions of transactions, big amounts of data, right? How do you tell that the customer who just signed up is related to the sales opportunity that a salesperson is working, right? That is a really difficult challenge. And Lean Data is the best platform I've ever seen to handle that. It's not perfect, but in terms of matching and routing, especially in these kind of complex data environments, I've never seen anything better. And it really, like, we lean on that a lot to facilitate like business requirements. So for example, if the teams change, if the segments change, if that type of thing happens, it's really, really easy to reconfigure lean data versus, you know, building your own custom solution or using some native Salesforce functionality, which, you know, frankly, is probably not going to work as well. So that's another one that I've really enjoyed working with.
Got it. Now let's dig in more into this remote thing. So obviously the team's probably a bit more remote than it previously was. Yep. What have been the big challenges for you there?
There, you know, there's a multiple of them, as I'm sure everyone has experienced during this time. I think, like, most immediately inside of sales ops, I think the biggest challenge was around, or it still is around, prioritization and project management, right? Because when you're in sales ops, you're working, you know, fundamentally, you're working on broken things a lot of the time, right? You're trying to solve problems that are inhibiting people from doing their work, right? And so when you're in an office environment, you are constantly reminded of that because the people that you're serving, the people who are experiencing those issues, are right in front of you, right? So they can come up to your desk and they can say, hey, what about this problem? Or what about this project? Or how is that going, right? And so that can be really distracting, but it also serves as a reinforcement of the need to make progress quickly and the need to solve problems, you know, as you've committed to. Whereas when you're working remotely, people can't do that anymore. Right? So they can ping you on Slack, but that's not, that doesn't have the same effect. And so I think what we've really tried to focus on is at the beginning of the quarter, at the beginning of the month, really focusing on what are we going to accomplish, right? How is that going to happen? When is that going to happen? Why is that? Why are those the most pressing priorities? And so if something does come up later on, that's going to get in the way of us being able to deliver on those priorities that we agreed to, we can be a lot more explicit with our stakeholders about the trade-offs. I think that that's really, I think the biggest challenge is, like, you kind of lose sight of what other people do on a day-to-day basis. And so it's like, hey, someone's going to toss something over the fence to sales ops and they're just going to do it, right? Well, in a remote world, like, that's not possible anymore because we have to really, really stick to what we said we were going to do. Or if we're going to deviate, we have to make a plan to do that, right? I think, like, that's on, like, the sales up side. I think on the general sort of sales go-to-market side, I think that it's become a lot harder to understand people's processes, especially in terms of the way that humans can solve the problems that systems create. And what I mean by that is, I'm sure everyone listening is familiar, like, there are certain things that people at your organization do that are kind of like papering over the cracks. They're like picking up things that are getting lost, or they're helping customers who are getting stuck, or they're finding the deals that have been lost and going after them, right? Like that type of activity that, like, it's always hard for someone in sales ops to understand what those people are doing in those scenarios and try to build a process around it. But in this world, it's almost impossible, right? And so because you can't shadow someone, you can't spend the time to have them explain exactly what they're doing, you know, in great detail. So I think that, like, just getting as close as possible to the end users and really establishing relationships, you know, that I think that that's something that I've valued since I started working in sales ops, is, like, if you have great relationships with the sales managers and salespeople on your team, then they're going to be able to alert you to some of those things. You're going to be able to ask them, hey, what is really going on with X, Y, and Z? Right, instead of kind of finding out about it months later when you realize that, you know, X number of customers have gone untouched or whatever the issue might be. So I think that that type of, like, understanding people's processes is much more difficult than it was before, and it's very relationship driven.
Yeah, so there's some significant operational changes. It kind of sounds like you need to be more strategic about the projects that sales ops are working on.
Absolutely.
Cool. And then also some cultural changes in that, well, not changes, but almost some cultural imperatives that actually the team may need to have stronger bonds in order to be as productive when remote.
Definitely. And, like, I think for senior leadership, right, like, are some of the things that I've heard at both at Brex and at other companies is, like, they're concerned with, what are people doing all day, right? Like, how are they maintaining their productivity in this remote world, right? And I think, like, obviously those questions can be answered just via results, right? So if you're hitting your quota or if you're succeeding in whatever the metrics are, then it doesn't matter, you know, what you were doing all day, right? You're being productive, right? But I think that, like, the better that people in sales ops have a very firm understanding of, like, what it actually takes to be an AE, right? Like, what does that entail, right? Like, how much, you know, for, just to give a specific example, like how much prospecting does an AE need to do in combination with their job of closing in order to hit their quota, right? If you start to have some of those answers at your fingertips, then number one, it becomes easier to say, to deliver answers to like, hey, what are people doing all day? Or is the team productive? But also it becomes easier to help improve those processes and help, you know, take the experiences of your reps, your AEs, and turn them into something better that is going to help everyone be more productive.
Sure. How permanent do you think these changes are going to be? How much of that, those changes that you have made, even if we do go back to more in-person work, I'm not sure if what your situation is with the Brex, whether you do plan to do that, but do you think the changes will be permanent or temporary?
I think a lot of them will be permanent. I think that that's something I've felt since the beginning of the pandemic. And I think that Brex is in the same situation as a lot of companies, which is that, you know, Brex doesn't want to endanger its employees. The outbreak in the United States is quite bad. You know, we're not going to return to a normal office environment for quite a long time. At least that's my opinion. And so like, as a result, and even if we did return, this is something I've talked with a lot of people about, even if some people did return to an office, essentially, they are going to be working remotely, right? Because if a big portion of the staff is working remotely, then everyone is working remotely, no matter where you are, right? And so what I've felt is that companies can use this to their advantage. And I think Brex is thinking about these things as well, as and many others, of course, is like, if we're going to have a remote workforce, how can that be, you know, number one, maybe cheaper, but number two, as effective or more effective than being in an office? And so I think that, like, and of course, the way to do that is through systems, right? Through system design and system architecture, where there isn't as much of that papering over the cracks, right? There isn't as much of the need for humans to kind of like use their brains to fix things, right? It's just that the problem has been solved for them. It's been sort of like extracted away. And that's something I think that Brex is certainly thinking about in all aspects of the company, right? In terms of the product, but also in terms of the sales team, is how do we make this job as not necessarily straightforward as possible, but as efficient as possible, given that we're not in person, we're not going to be for a long time. And I think those changes are here to stay, because even if we went back to the office tomorrow, right, like our company has changed, our systems have changed. We are not just going to let go of some of the efficiency gains and some of the progress we've made that in some ways was part and parcel of working remotely. Right. And so I think some of the changes that are driven about by working remotely are here to stay for sure.
You mentioned like the big question, which is how can we make remote teams as, or if not more productive than in-person yep. teams? That's the big one. Awesome. So moving on to forecasting, how, yep. like, I assume that's changed. If you can share, like, how has that changed? And then also, what are you doing to try and forecast more accurately?
That's a great question. I think people in sales ops struggle with that, no matter what organization you're talking about, because I think the biggest challenge, you know, for us, especially at Brex, I think historically, is just that forecasting is dependent in some ways on human inputted data, right? So things like close dates and stages, and you know, keeping opportunities open when they shouldn't be, like that type of thing. And so, you know, when I was at Square, essentially, like, one of the approaches taken was, okay, well, you know, we know that the pipeline hasn't been kept up in the way that we, you know, it's not perfectly hygienic, right? So that's fine. We are going to, as we project what we're going to close, we're just going to do our own analysis, right? We're going to work with the finance team, and we're going to basically make a determination as to what deals are actually dead, but haven't been closed out, for example, right? And so I think that that's one method of handling it, is just like kind of accepting that things are not as clean as you would want, and then kind of doing an analysis separately so you can deliver what you hope is an accurate forecast to like the finance team or the leadership team, right? I think the approach that we've taken at Brex, especially in this remote world, is like really trying to impress upon reps and managers that if they keep their pipelines clean, they will benefit, right? They will be able to make an accurate forecast for their own business. And you know, what are the things that we can do, you know, in terms of like maybe changing some of the stages, changing some of the automation, delivering better insights to them to help them understand that like, hey, a deal that you have that has been in the same stage for 100 days is very unlikely to close, right? And so I think that that's kind of the transformation that we've seen, is like kind of zooming in on the forecast so that you know, we're delivering, for example, dashboards and tools that allow reps and managers to forecast, because then like the laddered up forecast or like the team-wide forecast or a forecast you would deliver to leadership is more accurate. And so I think that that kind of goes hand in hand with the remote world, right? Is like, if everyone's on their own and they have to kind of manage their own business, like they need to understand why forecasting is important so that they're motivated to take the actions that they need to take. And also we need to make those actions easier, right? So if the product can tell us something about the stage of a customer, then that stage of the related stage of an opportunity should be automated, right? So that's, you know, that's really what we've tried to do, is take both a people and a systems approach to forecasting to hopefully create better forecasts.
Yeah, it's like, how can you incentivize the reps to make the forecast more accurate by adding better data to work with? That's like, totally, again, a massive question.
Yeah, that's an age-old question, right? Like, and I don't think that that question is ever really going to be perfectly solved. I think a lot of it also depends on how, you know, to kind of use like a buzzword, how transactional your sales organization is. So it's like, if you have a company where there's a very long demo cycle and you're trying to win over multiple stakeholders, or it's a very complex technical product, which, for example, at Square, you know, for enterprise level deals, that was really the case, right? It would take a really long time. Then, you know, the only recourse you have really is to lean on your reps to try to push them to like really keep their data updated and really provide the right information so you can make a forecast. Versus like, if you have a more transactional environment, faster sales cycle, more product driven, kind of like what Square is on the small and medium-sized businesses, where an AE's role is really just about closing a lot of businesses and moving quickly and staying organized, then you can use product signals, and then you can use perhaps some additional data that you have to make the forecasting and the data hygiene process more automated.
Got it. And then on to KPIs. What would you say is your favorite sales metric to track, and did that change with the virus?
I think that, I don't necessarily think it changed with the virus. Maybe it just became more important, but I am always a really big fan of conversion rates, and specifically like funnel conversion rates. So how effective is a salesperson and how effective are teams, et cetera, at taking business that is at the top of the sales funnel and turning that into a customer, right? I think that, you know, as Brex has evolved and as Square has evolved and all these other organizations, there's kind of been a separation of the tippy top of the funnel versus the sales funnel, right? So you have marketing maybe and partnerships and sales development and all of these sources of opportunities for AEs. And then it's really the AE's job to, and maybe the AE themselves as a source, right? Because they're prospecting. But then the conversion rate from that first step, so whether that be a qualified opportunity or whether that be a sign up from the customer or whatever that first step is, to the last point where the salesperson can control. So for instance, if like a deal is lost due to some technical problems or due to credit underwriting or something like that, that's not really in the salesperson's control, but like getting the customer, in Brex's case, to, for example, like submit a full application or sign up or whatever that last step is, I think is a great way to measure salespeople and measure their effectiveness and measure a lot of different things in one variable, right? Not just their sales skills and how are they pitching and how are they, you know, talking on the phone, but also their effectiveness at staying organized, right? Because if you see that a conversion rate, like what I'm describing, is dropping, then what you could infer is that, you know, potentially as you do some more investigation, is that the salesperson is letting some deals slip through the cracks, right? They should have converted some business that they ended up not being able to convert for one reason or another. And that's where you can really start to dig in and help them improve, right? And so that's, I think anything that can help you measure across salespeople is useful because you can make a comparison. But I think that particularly is helpful because you can really start to help people improve their sales skills and not just talking to customers, but like all aspects of the sales job with that metric.
Got it.
Let me actually move my position a little bit here, because I realize there's this sunlight bar behind my head. This is a classic working from home problem, as like videos, video conferencing changes. And just give me 1 second here. I'll come swing around.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of looks like a halo, so
I think this is going to be a little better.
There we go. Makes total sense. So measuring across salespeople, but you're also able to drill down to look at specific parts of their performance in order to jump in and help. Amazing. Absolutely. And then the final question is, who in your sales ops career has inspired or helped you the most?
It's a great question. A lot of different people, no question about it. Especially when I was at Square, some people who really went out of their way to help me understand things, right? Help me understand Salesforce development. That's not an easy subject. It takes a lot of time and energy to help someone who really doesn't know what they're doing, right? And so I have a lot of colleagues there who I hope, you know, are great friends and assisted me a ton. Sort of throw some specific names out there, but Zach and Kristen and Bo and Mike Rigg and all these people who were in the management of the Brex, the Square sales ops team, who really just helped me get started. I think that now, to answer the question directly, though, I think my current manager, Matt Belitsky, has been a huge influence on me, because I think he combines just enormous amounts of knowledge. So, you know, answering the question of how with an amazing ability to communicate and work with people. And I think that, you know, that's what we touched on to start the conversation is knowing how is really important. And it's really important to have people around you who can teach you the right ways of doing things or a better way of doing things or reframe your thinking about what solutions you might bring to bear. But equally, if not more important, is how do you communicate that? How do you get people to use this great thing that you've just built? How do you communicate to them the timelines of what you might be doing? I think one of the things that Matt is really a fan of is iterative development. So treating projects like engineers would treat them and say, okay, we're going to do a V0, a V1, a V2, a V3, right? We're going to solve the immediate problem and then we're going to build on the solution, right? Instead of thinking, oh, you know, and this is something I've fallen victim to, especially earlier in my career, was like, oh man, this problem is so big. How can we ever solve it, right? Like it's going to take months and we're going to have to do X, Y, Z, A, B, and C, right? And I think what Matt has impressed upon me is that like that might be the case, but you can start small and you can start by, you know, relieving some of the pain and then you can move to that bigger and grander solution that you're envisioning. So I think he has helped me a lot in just kind of like reframing problems, communicating more effectively, prioritizing more effectively so that, you know, both of us can collaborate on the how and the when, right? Like, and what solutions are we specifically going to bring to bear? So he has a background as a consultant and he's seen a lot of different businesses and a lot of different situations. And I've learned tremendously from that.
Shout out to Matt.
Absolutely.
David, so we've jumped into, we spoke a lot about systems and how they can make people make the remote team even more productive than the in-person team. We've talked about hygienic pipelines, and I've never heard that term before, but I really like it. I'm taking
that. Yeah, data hygiene is kind of where that comes from, but yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But I'm going to take that forward on this show. And then conversion rates. So yeah. Like it's been an eye-opening discussion, and I think the core thing that I would like the audience to take away is how can you make the remote team more productive than the team used to be in person. And I think if sales ops people can do that, then they'll become the star of the business almost. So yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. It starts with understanding the sales team, understanding the salesperson, what they're doing on a day to day, and then, you know, working from there.
Awesome. David, thank you so much for coming on.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.